Welcome to Season 3 of Cult and Culpability. I'm T.A. Newman, your host and keeper. In a moment, we'll rejoin the Priddo family. But first, a reminder that Chaosium's tabletop role-playing game Call of Cthulhu contains mature themes, including cosmic horror, character death, and loss of sanity. If you'd like to become a friend of the Playhouse, then please support us on Ko-fi. That's ko-fi.com/Miskatonic Playhouse, where you can gain access to exclusive shows and content for as little as £1. And now it's time to pull back the curtain and roll the dice. Reverend Priddo, the book in your hands is the book you have been seeking for such a long time. Thomas is over your shoulder, as is Miss Lambert. What do you do?
Feverishly, he flicks open the passage. Is this exactly the sort of thing he's been after all this time? He starts to read.
And seeing where you were previously, in the pages torn from the book that you've seen, you look at this. And you begin reading.
31st of January, in the year of our Lord 1709, birth of a god. With the marrow seemingly living forever, although not invulnerable, they can only seem to add to their ranks by converting and evolving wayward humans into their own kind, or by having human males impregnate their females. A natural birth between marrows is seen as hideous, almost blasphemous. Therefore, by whatever ancient magics or unnatural communion took place, Mother Hydra laid an egg, which appeared to be fertilized yet slow in gestation. Jonathan, Elias, and myself saw an opportunity to return to the land above water, and make it appear that we were still in the service of these ancient underwater dwellers. This unnatural birth became an immediate concern in the Marrow culture. Father Dagon saw this egg as a challenge to his throne and worship, as far as we could understand the motives of these creatures. Therefore, he did what any king would do with a perceived threat. He sent murderous and loyal acolytes that appeared to be marrows, accompanied by horrific tentacle twisting writhing forms, like oil spilt in water with a thousand eyes refusing to dissipate. These murderous pairs were called the Marrow Twa Shogor. Father Dagon made it clear for all to hear that they were there to kill the gestating egg before it hatched. Before the Marrow Twa Shogor could find the egg and terminate it, Elias convinced Jonathan and I to play our part in the biggest gamble of our lives, to convince Mother Hydra to allow us to return to the surface world, along with the egg, to hide and to protect it until the time was right for it to hatch.
Horrified, the Reverend slams the book shut and actually turns to Miss Forrester. Who delivered this book? Is Mr. Burrows inside?
No, sir. Mr. Owens from the church, he came by earlier today. He said that unfortunately he had a guest with him that he couldn't get rid of, and he wanted to make sure that you had what was yours, and that it was a matter of life and death.
What a jolly good chap that Owens is. I say he's really delivered, come through for us on this one. Good. Shall we, children, Miss...
Reverend.
Sorry, Miss Lambert. I thought you were Miss Anastasia for one moment. You are, of course, very welcome.
Reverend?
Yes?
Miss Foster's hand kind of reaches out to your forearm and kind of grips it, just you know, enough to get your attention. She knows she's breaking social boundaries here, but she does so and just locks eyes with you and says, Mr. Owens, I've never seen anybody... so determined as he was, sir. He said that if anything happened to him, that you'd look out for his wife and daughter.
Well, very well. Yes.
He told me and to say that to you, sir.
Thank you, Miss Foster. And let me make the same promise to you, Miss Foster. We will look after you. You work here at Prideaux Manor, and I'm very glad you are here. And your service to Miss Anastasia, I say, unfortunately, is not joining us. If you would be so kind as to continue your service, feel just that little bit more secure.
Is she somewhere else, sir, that I can... I could accompany her?
I do believe she's headed down to the health spa of all places, but that'll be a trip for another time. Perhaps right. You might be so good as to put some hot water on. I do believe we'll need some bathing water and some brandy if that is available.
Oh, very good, sir. Harris, we'll get a fire going. Of course. Very good, sir.
Thank you, thank you. Shall we, Miss Lambert, Master Thomas?
Uncle, we need to make a detour via the study. This talk of Mother, was it Mother Hydra, Father Dagon? Merrows? I've read about this.
I believe we have it. It's very dark in this study. Let us just gather round the fire. Just get our wits. I believe this is quite an evening that we need to just... Well, we'll just talk about it. No, certainly I could, because... I mean, did you see the amount of bodies there were? I have never seen anything like it.
I don't think I'll ever forget it.
How can I forget the amount of bodies, Uncle?
Yeah, go. Come on. Let us get inside it. And we'll head in, and, yes.
And Harris is standing at the door. Welcome back, Lord Prideaux, Reverend Prideaux, Miss Lambert. Rooms have been prepared, and the servants are up there now, running baths. Is there anything else I can do for you to make you comfortable before you sleep?
Just need to check nobody else has broken into Prideaux Manor whilst we've been away, Harris. You know what it's like around here.
Absolutely not, sir. Absolutely not. If anybody has broken in, sir, I will make sure I see to them myself.
Jolly good, Harris. Jolly good. Yes, if you could let us know, how long will the baths take to get warm? About 20 minutes, something like that?
Yes, sir. We started them as soon as we saw the carriage arriving, just in case you required such refreshment.
I'm terribly sorry. It's a little early to be having a bath, I know, but it's a bit of an occasion, so we shall take some, Thomas, brandy? Miss Lambert?
Brandy.
Miss Lambert, could I offer you a drink?
I would never normally touch brandy, but I think tonight I need one.
I feel the same. Brandy in the study, please, Harris.
Yes, very good. To the study. And he'll walk you to the study, and then he'll arrive a moment or two later with a series of brandies, different things. You know in the study anyway that there's a number of drinks within the drinks cabinet, but you can see that he's brought out a rather special. Would anybody... I'm going to ask if anybody would like to make a psychology roll.
I'll give it a go.
Why not?
Now, that's an 80 over 10. This is a failure.
Everything's fine, Thomas.
That's also a failure. 68 against 20. Charlotte is a little bit out of it at this point, I think.
Again, everything is fine, Charlotte.
The Reverend isn't much better. He is 89 versus 46. So, yes, everything is fine.
Absolutely
perfect.
Nothing to worry about. Everything is fine. Nobody is nervous for any other reason. Please drink your brandy. Carry on your conversation. It's been a long night.
Thomas will head to the bookcase where he deposited the copy of Waves of Madness by Stuart H. Bruce. Can I find Waves of Madness on the shelf?
You can.
Excellent. I will bring it over to the Reverend Prideaux. Uncle, I think we should look at this book as well. I feel there is definitely a crossover. Have you seen this one?
Yes. I think I've been through the library. Miss Lambert, it tells a very troubling story of, let's just say, a a mother goose coming back to collect her eggs and not being happy with the people that stole them. A situation where I may be facing in very, very shortly. But before that, your very good health to the people that are gathered here and to absent friends. And he'll clink the glasses and say to Charlotte, Miss Lambert, you really are looking rather well. That stay in Dun Manor has done you the world of good.
Well, I have to ask, Reverend Thomas, did you know that I'm a Dun?
I promise you, I had no idea.
How has this come about? Lady Dun whispered something to me about it, but I thought it was just a bit of a ruse. How could you possibly be a Dun? Not that I wish to dissuade you. Forgive me, Charlotte. It has been quite an evening.
Well, for quite some time, I felt as though I'm not really one of you, and now I know why. Emily told me tonight. Apparently, my grandmother? She was married before, and she was married to a Dun.
Dun? I don't quite understand. That would be quite some time ago.
Neither do I. That's why I'm asking you both whether you knew, and if you did know, when?
No, I mean, how did you come to this information? Did you read it in
Emily.
The family tree or something?
No, Emily Dun. She told me tonight. It was though they were waiting for me to be there.
Waiting? Goodness me. But you're, well, in your yourself, you fainted at the, on the beach and...
Yes, they took very good care of me, but this book and that says about the egg, I've seen it. I've been there. It's on the ship. The ship I keep dreaming about. A giant red egg. I heard a voice. I was on the deck of the ship and I heard a voice from the captain's cabin and it said, Mother. And it was calling out and it was there. I saw it and I touched it.
No.
A giant red egg.
I too have seen this. Are you sure it was on the ship? It wasn't thumping into the water like a heartbeat or something like that.
You mean the red egg made of red jelly with the creature inside in Jenkins's lair, in the centre of Jenkins's lair, with these, I'm going to call them merrows, these fish things in tanks either side.
Well, it would appear it is on the ship now, according to Miss Lambert. I'm sorry,
well,
is it Miss Lambert or Miss Dun? Which would you prefer?
I don't know. I honestly don't know.
How about you call me George and I'll call you Charlotte, just like back at the house.
I would like that.
It's good to have you home, Charlotte. I have missed you.
Thank you, George.
Now, this lair, Thomas, well... we had this very strange situation occur. We went to the... Charlotte, after you fainted, we were somewhat abruptly escorted to this health spa, and as we were in there, well, something untoward happened, and we saw one of these poor creatures that had been savagely brutalized by, I can only assume, Dun. Thomas, these creatures... are as much of a victim as we are here. They are being used for machinations. And he looks around a little bit sheepishly. I think they are playing with biblical forces beyond their imagination. What if these creatures are part of the end of days, brought about too soon by these fools who don't know what they're meddling with? There is much, much life left in the world. We are not ready for the end of days yet, but they meddle with these creatures foretold in the Bible, these frogmen that come out of the river, and the mist that is sweeping across. They need to be stopped. What they are doing before they bring about a wrath.
Uncle and Charlotte, these... tales you both tell of religion and of fairies. This is not what we are dealing with. We are dealing with facts here. Yes, these people are manipulating these creatures, but these are abominations themselves. when I was in Jenkins's lair, there was one on a table. There were notes. And Thomas stops and thinks he put some of the papers into his jacket that he was wearing. He might have some notes. He completely forgot about these because of his ordeal. And he quickly rings the bell for Harris.
You hear the footsteps tottering down the hall, and then there's a knock at the door.
Enter.
You rang, sir.
Harris, to my room. Can you get the tailcoat I was wearing when I returned from the lake? You can bring it straight here, please.
It has been cleaned, sir.
And the contents of the pockets?
In your room, sir.
In that case, if you can fetch those for me, please.
Very good, sir.
And Harris trots back off.
Thomas, you have to understand, these are creatures of God's green earth. They are to be cared for as we would those things that swim in the sea, not the those things that aren't fish. Mammals, yes, the dolphins. They are victims of man's machinations. These people that, well, I fear he would be king, and that is what this is building to. There's some crazy sort of ritual that they want to build up to. I feel that what we are dealing with here, yes, they are forces, supernatural nature, but only supernatural in that we don't understand their function and purpose at the moment. Behind every miracle, there is a perfectly good scientific explanation, I'm sure. That is the marvel of God. He is able to explain himself in such clear ways that everyone can understand. It is this nature that we must help and understand and prevent. I don't quite know how. This is why, you know, Jenkins, you say Jenkins is behind all of this. I can't believe Jenkins can do all of these things. I mean, he kidnapped you and Lord Hawthorne let him escape. Certainly he is part of the mix, but unless we know somebody just as dangerous as Mr. Jenkins, I very much doubt that we're going to be able to find out the machinations of what is going on, but we will piece it together.
And that does raise another good question, Uncle. Is Hawthorne and Dunn, where did they figure into this? You must remember, I've not had a chance to talk to them as you have. Anastasia said that they were trying to kill her.
I don't believe Tobias would have let her go as easily as he did if he feared for her life, but can only
Tobias?
Trust Lady Tobias Hawthorne.
Tobias, that gentleman on the dance floor was a Hawthorne. You were letting her dance with a Hawthorne.
He's a very good chap, Thomas. Please don't jump to any conclusions.
But no. if the Hawthorns are trying to kill her, surely they would send in a, what was it that Cosgrove called it, a Judas goat?
I'm sorry, is that a gambling term? I'm not aware of there being any Judas goats in the Bible.
Oh, Uncle,
I don't think he owned
one. Uncle, you know the tale of the scapegoat. This is what he is.
Who wants to kill Anastasia and why? Why would anybody want to kill Anastasia?
These were her own words. She
what
told
have
me.
I missed?
She told me
while
the
I
Hawthorns
was in Dunn Manor.
Wanted her dead. Maybe and just Lord Hawthorne.
Surely not.
I believe Tobias is looking out for her, and I have to believe Lady Hawthorne when she says that she's safe. She is a Prido, and to be so blatant would risk alienating us at this vital time for whatever part we are yet to play in this strange. But take me back to this egg, this creature, this. You say you had a vision on a ship, Miss Lambert. Charlotte.
Yes. Yes. While I was in Dunn Manor, I had a vision of the Devonshire. I've been dreaming about it for some time now, and so has Anastasia. As I said, I that was where I first had the notion that perhaps I was a Dunn. It was Emily who told me the truth of it, but I was in the cabin and I saw the egg. And wait, at the church, That stained glass window, it's the shape of an egg. It's red. I remember thinking how odd it was at the time that the land, if it was a map, I remember thinking how odd it was that it wasn't coloured green, but it was red.
By George,
this
you're
whole
right.
town is the egg. And we have a week. That's what Hawthorne said. In 7 days, the god is born.
We need to go back to the church. And it was at the church where I do believe the I don't wish to sound out of turn, but sounds quite natural now that. Well, I believe the egg spoke to me. I don't know whether it has spoken to any of you. I think it wants help. I think we need to do something to. Get it away from certainly Hawthorne's plans and what he intends for this town.
What would we do with it, even if we could rescue it?
We return it to the sea.
Or
surely,
we ask Mother to come and collect.
You've read Waves of Madness. The Mother and the Father came to destroy the land. But if we remove this egg from the land, hopefully, just a chance, they may not come for the land. They may be satisfied.
Yes, I think you're right.
The Reverend pauses and doesn't respond, but he is sadly thinking about whether or not this land can be saved. He is wondering how rotten to the core it could be. But he has to try and remember the innocent people in here. But after seeing such carnage in Dun Manor and the complicit nature of the servants and the willingness of these people here to serve this ruling family and the fate that happened to Lord Prideaux, how much is there left of this town to save?
Thomas, are you leafing through Waves of Madness as you have this conversation?
I think Thomas is flicking through. There are pictures, looking at pictures, seeing whether there's anything that
can you
jumps
give me
to
a
mind.
Luck roll, please?
Luck? Oh, very well. That is a 22 under 28. That is a regular success.
Then in someone's book, you are lucky. In another person's book, well, we shall see. But as you're flicking through the pages and you're rereading that section on what happened to Cantro Gwelod, what happened to the land beyond Wales that once was there, you almost realise there's some kind of bookmark in Waves of Madness. And as you turn the page, you see it and you realise it's a tarot card.
My God, your God, Uncle. It's only an egg. It's a bloody red egg.
No need to swear, Thomas.
No, it's a egg the colour of blood, Uncle. Blood, red, egg, Uncle. And he pulls the card out and whips it out to show.
Yeah, as you're doing that, you all hear a consistent knock at the door, which is getting more tired as it goes on.
Enter.
Thank you, sir. Sorry. Ran up the stairs, you see. These were the notes, sir, from your jacket.
Harris walks into the room and he has this collection of diagrams, images, but you can see that there is a written note amongst these. Bizarrely, the diagrams are, you can see there's almost autopsies of fish. There is mythical depictions of fish-like humans. There is a series of images of the human brain that has been annotated and labelled. And there are some rather disturbing images of creatures that it's hard to explain what species they remain in. Yet they seem to have been surgically explored, shall we say. But there is a written document that accompanies these. Thomas, would you mind reading it for us?
The Merrows, Deep Ones, are an inferior race who act like worker bees or soldier ants. Their own personal autonomy has yet to be seen. The purser will not be obedient to others' wills and declares that we shall be the next iteration of these creatures. We will have all of the strengths and none of their weakness. This is what it means to be a shallow one. This is it. This is what they mean to do to us. This is what they're trying to do with these Merrows. But who or what is the purser?
Isn't that a naval position on a ship? So isn't that Hawthorne saying he's taking a stand? Wasn't he the purser? I do believe I thought I had Anastasia say something at the game or something. But this is
that
very
does sound familiar. Yes,
Charlotte, are you well enough to be viewing these things? I don't wish to be insulted, but you have had, shall we say, hallucinations. Are you cured of these? I don't wish to impede you any further.
I really thought we were past all this, George.
It's been quite an evening for me. If there's anything we need to know to protect each other, now is the time. I've confessed I've seen things and heard things that people may see I was mad, and I just want you to be all right with what we're doing and what we may have to do, and if there's anything that can help us, dreams, contacts, people, then we need to examine all avenues.
I am not a mad woman, and I'm just as able to deal with this as you are and as Thomas is. The only thing I could need right now is a shawl. She is shivering, I think, wearing only an evening gown that's probably quite low-necked and short-sleeved, and she's probably a bit in shock as well, I would imagine.
Thomas removes his slightly blood-stained jacket and passes it around Charlotte's shoulders.
Thank you. Thank you, Thomas. You're very kind.
I apologise, Charlotte. I didn't mean to upset you. I'm going to finish my brandy and head upstairs. It's been quite an evening. I'm going to go to my room and do some praying for us all, if you'll excuse me. And he'll knock his brandy back and then head out and leave these two to it. He's going to head upstairs.
Is he taking the book with him? The journal of Lieutenant Lord Matthew Prideaux?
In his absent-mindedness and not wanting to stay very, very much long, he'll probably leave it there. He's made a bit of a faux pas with Charlotte and he wants to retreat.
As you're going upstairs to your room, can you give me an intelligence roll?
Mm-hmm. That is a hard success. 29 versus 80.
It's just when you go up to your room, Reverend, you take a few steps up and the weight of the evening is beginning to, well, make itself evident upon you mentally,
there it is.
Physically. It's been, well, to put it in generous terms, horrific. You've seen an entire ballroom of people dead. You've seen these supposed rulers and protectors of the town oppress and put upon their will to these individuals who have apparently willingly gone with their plans. And yet all of these inhuman factors remain about dreams and monsters and rituals and knives, and they all seem to be washing around your mind. But it's as you're walking to your room, there was the king's room, queen's room, captain's room, purser's room, surgeon's room, the lieutenant's room. And when you think for a moment, with your success there, with your, well, hard success, yeah, you've read about this. But specifically assigning those roles now, the lieutenant's room, the surgeon's room, the purser's room, you know who they are. You know who these rooms have been named after, and it is not an accident, Reverend.
He'll stop for a moment when, upon realizing who the players are, just take a look into the lieutenant's room. Probably nothing, but he wants to just take a look around and see what, if anything springs out to him on this horrific night.
Can you give me a spot hidden, please?
That is a failure. 57 versus 43.
You look around the room, the bed is made, The room is in a pristine condition, yet it's nothing that stands out. I mean, it's at the front of the house, some beautiful wide windows. You can't help but see through the windows that red mist curls through the streets of the town beneath you.
He's going to draw these curtains in a bit of a fury. He remembers what Hawthorne said about looking, and he wants to look. He's going to not turn the room upside down, but he's going to get down. He feels something, and he wants to look very much harder at this room, whether he has to pull things down or just he wants to give this room a good going over and maybe push that spot hidden roll.
Ooh, okay. Let's have a pushed roll then, please.
That is a failure of 44 versus 43.
Oh, so close.
Oh,
so
close. Painful. Unfortunate.
In this fury.
So we didn't decide on the parameters of the push roll. I'm going to say that you're getting in closed spaces, you're getting in unrefined areas, you're exploring this room to the nth degree. Reverend, to you, when you're exploring this room, what is it that fumbles? What is it that goes wrong? You've pulled the curtains, you've gotten down on the floor, you've gotten under the bed, you've got in the wardrobe, you've got in the private bathroom. What is it for you that goes wrong?
He uncharacteristically gets very, very frustrated, and he is pulling and pulling and pulling at something that isn't giving way. And when it gives way, something happens.
It's around the bed, the four-poster bed. You're trying to pull back some of the drapes that seem to be hanging there, and as you're looking, they keep washing over your head in this annoyance that you're batting it away. And the third time you bat it away, it just gets to a point where tonight has been so frustrating that you haven't been able to pull yourself together and act like the leader that you know you are, the leader of your flock. But for some reason with this family, you can't lead them. And as you push away this drape, as you pull away this drape, you pull the bloody thing down and the drapes around the entire bed pull down. And you see, Reverend, on the wall behind the bed, that very familiar symbol. The one that's on your right hand is painted on the wall, hidden behind the drape, in blood. And it is old, and it is dried, and it is brown, and it is crusted. Someone, many moons ago, drew this symbol above this bed because they wanted it to be there. Not be seen, but they wanted it to be there. Speaking of those who want to be seen but also don't want to be there, Lord Cosgrove, you are walking with Lady Hawthorne, Lord Dunn, Lady Dunn, and you're having a merry walk down a coastal path, making your way down to, well, the beach of all places. The wind is blowing, the tide is rolling in. You have an opportunity to talk, Lord Cosgrove, with whomever you like. Lady Hawthorne, likewise.
I say, Lord Cosgrove, how are you finding Kingscombe? I hope that the atmosphere is stimulating enough for you.
Yes. If anything, it may even be a trifle too stimulating.
Oh, yes, we do tend to find that with newcomers. But I'm sure you'll grow accustomed to it after a few days. I can't recommend the spa waters enough. And, of course, bracing sea air, wonderful walk on the beach, in the moonlight. Most restorative, I think you'll find.
Yes, I can feel myself becoming more restored by the moment.
Excellent, excellent.
You hear Hawthorne call out from the front of the party. Cosgrove, look down there. You see down there on the beach? And
yes.
You can, Cosgrove. You can see, the beach extending as it does across the docks, but you can see that there is a ship. There is a wreck of a ship on the beach.
Yes, is this some sort of local landmark?
You might say so. As of tonight, yes, it will be a local landmark. But once upon a time, Cosgrove, that ship there, the HMS Devonshire, that sailed 100 or so years ago from here, joined in a battle, fighting the French at the time were considered rogues, commanding the seas they shouldn't be commanding, an active war. And I tell you, Cosgrave, that ship there, well, it did more than its duty. But there came a day when it sank, and it sank at the hands of a ship called the Lys. Buggers. A lot of them, those French, eh? Absolute buggers. Cannons, eyes and mark. Can't fault them for that. But I tell you what, Cosgrave, that day, over 100 years ago, that day is the reason you're standing here, right now, looking out over this bay, looking at that ship.
I do appreciate that it has been something of a trying evening, but I'm afraid I'm not quite following.
Cosgrave, when I mentioned there'd be benefits to being friends with us, well, one of the many benefits to being friends with us, the right kind of people, the right kind of society, is you get to see your former mistakes. You get to live through them. You get to live beyond them. Cosgrave, how old do you think I am?
I wouldn't hazard a guess. It would be frightfully impolite.
A man of manners. Let me put you out of your misery, Cosgrave. I am 136 years old. Surprises you, doesn't it?
I think, after the evening that we've all shared, very little at this stage could surprise me.
Well, let me surprise you a little further, Cosgrave. Dunn, and he points over his shoulder at Lord Dunn, myself, and unfortunately you weren't here to meet our third companion, our disciple, Second Lieutenant Matthew Prideaux. The three of us, we sailed on that ship, and on that ship, Cosgrave, we sank, and we saw, and we experienced, and we lived. And Cosgrave, we saw something that no man is supposed to see. But if you behave yourself, and if you welcome us in the way that we have welcomed you, this control over life, this control over one's reality, could be something that you are allowed to manipulate, play with, toy with. Does that whet your beak, Cosgrave?
I would be lying if I said I were not intrigued.
And I like it when you tell the truth, Cosgrave. Very much like it when you tell the truth. Right. Best foot forward, everybody. Let's get down to the old girl, shall we? The HMS Devonshire, and see what secret she has in store for us. And you begin marching down this coastal path, which is quite winding, and there's a few rocks, and it's difficult because it's still very late at night. But you find yourself navigating your way down. The stars are bright. The moon is bright. There is an illumination. But Lord Cosgrave, you and Lady Hawthorne, you both have an opportunity to talk to each other or anybody else within the party that you'd like to during this trek towards the HMS Devonshire.
Lady Hawthorne, please do not think me forward in asking this, but what your husband has just said there, is this a revelation to you? Is this the kind of thing he says often?
You have to understand that Lord Hawthorne is a very determined man. He likes to get his own way. He likes to be in control. So yes, this is very typical of his pronouncements. and I have been privileged to be privy to his plans for quite some time now. As a devoted wife should be, you know, there to support her husband in his endeavours, as society would expect.
And what would you be doing if you were free of the shackles of society's expectations?
Oh, given what he's achieved within those shackles, well, to borrow a slightly oceanic-themed homily, I would say that the world was quite probably his oyster.
I'm sorry, Lady Hawthorne, you misunderstand me. I wasn't asking your husband. I was asking about you.
I hadn't really considered that, obviously.
I'm sure you have. We all have.
Well, as a dutiful wife, my husband's position in society obviously reflects greatly on myself.
But you are not simply an adornment to your husband, are you?
I would like to think that I'm more than that to him, but Elias has always been a man who very much knows his own mind and is determined and forthright in all things, shall we say. I have always found it best to support him and, if required, steer him gently, but let him believe it is his own doing. But in this matter, it is most certainly his own thoughts that steer it. I merely hope for the best for my children and the town, and my own safety and preservation.
Yes, I did rather wonder if we can continue the nautical theme, whose hand was upon the rudder? You, as I believe a great many wives of great men have done over the years, you do seem to, as you said, direct your husband.
In household matters, yes. In terms of this endeavour that he, Matthew and Jonathan undertook all those years ago, he is most definitely to the forefront.
Of course.
But in dutiful wife, I expect to be rewarded for my service, and then my children and his children by his first wife will also be protected and rewarded.
I understand.
You begin to make your way down onto the beach now. The wind seems less washed on the beach now that you've come down the side of the cliff from Dunmanor. And you can see as you march in this rather militant line, even though, you know, there are ladies amongst the company, it seems like Hawthorne is driving quite a significant march towards this location across the beachfront. Lord Cosgrove, could you give me a spot hidden, please?
Yes, that's a hard success.
Then you can see, without doubt, that you are on the edge of the red mist as you walk across the beach, but you can see that it is significant amongst the town. It is spread, weaving between the streets and the alleys, but you walk through it. You breathe it in, you breathe it out. It's no different to any other mist. It's just this unique colour. But as you walk along the beachhead towards the HMS Devonshire, you can see in the distance now, with your hard success, that there are a number of very still silhouettes almost circling the HMS Devonshire.
On the beach itself?
On the beach itself, almost circling the shipwreck. There's a number of silhouetted figures within the red mist around the HMS Devonshire.
I say, Hawthorne, are we expecting to meet friends here?
It's not about meeting friends. It's about, well, engaging those that work with us, for us, you might say. Listen, there are creatures up there, Cosgrove. You will have seen them tonight. They are, well, how shall I describe them? Filthy degenerates. They are duns, creatures. Dun! Dun! You're filthy creatures.
Yes. They're the Lord Cosgrove creatures from the sea, long, deep, long hidden, of the culture, the egg. But I have adapted them to respond to the egg, and therefore respond to us under our control.
Hawthorne jumps in. Yes, filthy blighters. Disgusting little things. They are, well, should we say they are followers and not leaders, Cosgrove? They do what they're told.
So, they pose no danger, then?
Not to me.
Indeed.
Indeed. We return to Prideaux Manor, where the Reverend Thomas, Miss Lambert, have uncovered a number of secrets. The Reverend has removed himself to get some sleep after such a horrific event. Thomas, Charlotte, you're still having a brandy by the fire. You have a moment together.
For the first time since arriving in Kingscombe, Thomas has got a chance to stop and take stock of what's going on. Now he's out of the influence of the red jelly, and I think suddenly all the emotions, all of the heartache, all of the pangs, all of the withdrawal, all of the devastation and the death that has occurred over the past 24, 48 hours is just going to hit him. And he's going to shudder. Brandy spilling from the glass. And look up to Charlotte. Tears just starting to glisten in his eyes. Please, help me find my sister. This is too much.
We will.
You've always been her friend. You've always been there for her. I admit I haven't. I know I haven't. But the fact that she's actually gone. We need to find... I'm sorry. He turns away, wiping a tear from his eye to face the fire. This is unseemly of me. I do apologise.
Please don't apologise. And Charlotte will gently take the glass from his hand where he's spilled it and refills it and gives it back to him. We will find her. Do you think if we find this egg, if we can get it and if we can give it back to them, they'd let her go if they truly have her?
That is a hope. At this stage, I don't know. Are we playing into the hands by giving the egg back to the sea? Is that what they want? So many things.
I don't know.
But
I don't know.
If it gets Anastasia back, she was right. She was so right about so many things, and I just didn't listen.
She always has been.
Yeah. You're right.
It's not too late, Thomas. She does care for you a great deal.
Are you sure? I feel we've been growing more and more distant since Father disappeared.
Your whole family cares for you.
Try saying that to my uncle. Look at the way he treats me. Like a child. Like a petulant child.
He is a good man, I believe. But just perhaps sometimes a little confused. I think he finds it harder than most of us to accept what's been going on here.
Yes, Uncle, he means well, but his head is full of God and religion. He's contextualizing what we're seeing, this unnatural, inexplicable thing to fit within his narrow view of good and evil. This is not good and evil. This is more than that. And it scares me.
There was a time I was genuinely afraid he was going to have me put away. That he thought I was a madwoman.
We all thought that when you married the Frenchman, but you know what? I have to admit, you seemed happy with him. And sometimes...
I was.
I would give my right arm for a little bit of that happiness that you had with Monsieur Lambert.
As you say, I would give myself... I would give everything. Let me say that again.
I was only giving my right arm. Not the rest of it.
Yeah, that was it.
As you give say, myself you'd... to the Frenchman.
As you say, you'd give your right arm.
He probably wouldn't say no, to be honest.
Oh, we...
Is that what you said, your right arm?
I'd give my right arm, yes.
Okay, cool. As you say, you give your right arm for a little bit of happiness, you hear a knock at the door, but it's not the same knock you're used to hearing from Harris. It's... three short, sharp knocks. And then an envelope, which is... slid under the door.
Thomas walks to the door and opens it.
The corridor is empty. No one to be seen. Dark. It's very late at night.
Thomas shudders. The last time he opened a door to no one there and an envelope pushed under was at Shipley Manor. And Mr. Jenkins had delivered a letter to his sister. And hand shaking, brow sweating, he brings the envelope over to Charlotte. Open it. I can't. Please.
All right. And she does so.
You recognise the writing, Charlotte, as do you, Thomas, even though you try to deny it. And it is the writing of Mr. Stephen Jenkins.
Oh, no.
Damn you, Jenkins!
It does say on the envelope, Miss Prideaux. Would you still like to open it and read it?
I think we have to, don't we? We can't just leave that there. I know it's addressed to Anastasia, but let's be honest, it's probably not the first time that we've read her mail.
Well, I will add that there is a slight weight to the envelope. It's rather than just a missive, there's something significant in the envelope as well that you can feel as you lift it up. But, Charlotte, are you the one to open it?
I think so.
Well, as you open it, the envelope almost drops to the floor and the letter just kind of unfolds in your hand. And you hear that oh-so-familiar voice.
To my intended, you are beginning to see the truth in the world that I live in, and soon the world that you will live in too. My master would use me simply as a tool, but I have so much more to offer. And when I marry into one of the chosen families, one of the disciples, I will, with you by my side, finally reach the top of this ridiculous social pyramid, proving myself to Lord Hawthorne. It requires me to act beyond the normal conventions, but with a little help from someone who can see what may come and how it should be used to our favour. Therefore, I give you another gift. This is a token of what will happen. I enjoy watching you work out what this means. But may I say, my beloved, I am yours, and you are mine. Your devoted fiancé, Mr. Stephen Jenkins.
Charlotte, Thomas, after reading this letter over each other's shoulder, you look to the envelope on the floor, and you can't help but see that having rolled out of the envelope is a finger with a ring on it.
Thank you for joining us for Cult and Culpability. Remember, you can find us at www.miskatonicplayhouse.com, and you can also visit the main stage for other scenarios from the Miskatonic Playhouse, with links in the show notes below. Please like and subscribe, and if you can spare a minute to leave a review, it makes a huge difference to other like-minded listeners who will be able to find and enjoy our work. Until next time, when the curtain rises again.